Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, the Reds, it is the weekend, the show from the Anfield Wrap. Myself, Gareth Roberts, Adam Melia, Damien Kavanagh and Paddy Fitzsimmons. We're getting excited about the fact that the proper football is back. No more of this international stuff until the end of March. It means we can knuckle down and find out exactly how good Liverpool are and what they are made of. There is a game every 3 or 4 days now. For the foreseeable, the Premier League, the Champions League, the World Club Cup, the League Cup, all of these things on the agenda for Liverpool Football Club. Damien, I'll start with you, mate. I mean, so far, we've seen Klopp leaning on a core of players. Six players have appeared in all 12 Premier League games so far. Firmino, Wijnaldum, Robertson, Van Dijk, Trent and Mane. Three have played in 11. Fabinho, Salah, Henderson. And you'd throw Alisson in if he wasn't injured. He would have been in there as well. So basically, there's been like a sort of core of 18 outfield players that he's used so far. When it's 11 wins from 12, you can't really criticise that plan.
Yeah.
But from here on in, as I've just said, it's going to ramp up now. It's going to get a lot more hectic. Yeah. Do you see some of the peripheral players, the squad members now coming in and playing a part?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I think he's got it bang on, hasn't he? I mean, the table doesn't lie. The stats are great. What an unbelievable start. I think he's wanted to start, looked at the fixture list and thought, some tough games in there. We've got a tougher start as anybody in the league. Let's get the points on the board. Let's start as we mean to go on. That's worked. I think he's been, maybe, if he was honest, he'd be a bit surprised that we were so far ahead at this stage, given the fixtures. And so now it's a question of just continuing what we've been doing. But the core of the team, I like the idea that Jürgen wants to work with a squad of about 18 players instead of getting like two players for every position. You know, because it's very difficult to keep them all happy. A number of them are versatile, and so that means that he can be involved more often and he can switch his formation a little bit, so that helps with that. And this is how you get players who don't get on the pitch in Madrid jumping around with the trophy as if they've won it themselves personally. That's the nature of what Jürgen is, togetherness that he brings, you know. And it's not just a question of hugging people, it's a strategy, and it's worked. But now, given the physical nature of the relentless fixture schedule, you've got players there. I mean, look at Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I mean, he's getting his minutes in matches that don't count because they're for England. Well, that's good, isn't it? You know, when he's getting up to scratch, he's got a knife for a goal. It's make or break for Kaiser, I think. He's got all the talent, all the raw ingredients that you'd ask for. You can be kind to him and say he's being injured. But now you've got an opportunity here to keep the core. You're talking about six or seven players who are going to play all the time and rotate one or two out. And so here's a chance now for Naby, for the centre-backs to be alternated as well, you know, alongside Virgil, and say, well, OK, we've got two games every week and you can play in one of them. That keeps you involved, it keeps you up to strength, and it keeps the freshness as well. So, exciting times, and definitely now is the time to be changing the team. Not wholesale, but like I say, two for this game, three for that game, and keeping that, the ones he's used up to now, keep it tight with them, and let's really put some more, you know, put some more points on the board, because if we're in just the same position at the end of December as we are now, but in dreamland, aren't we? All we've just got to do is just keep doing what we've been doing.
Damien touches on something there, Adam, and there's an interview with Klopp with James Pearce for The Athletic. It's only come out this afternoon, so perhaps people haven't had a chance yet to read that. But funnily enough, he touches on something in the interview where he says it's by design that, you know, there's this many people. Of course he could have a slightly bigger squad, but he doesn't want to, because he said he wants to be able to work with them very closely, know what they're about, know what makes them tick, know whether they're happy or sad. And obviously, the more you bolt on, the harder that becomes. Nevertheless, there's any worries at all about this squad and about the quality of the squad once you start to dig down? I mean, there are a couple of injury doubts this weekend. We'll talk about that in more detail later on when we preview the Palace game. But there are, depending on who you follow and who your friends are and things like that, there are still some people who are a little bit glass half empty type thing about the current Liverpool squad.
Well, I'm not one of them. I think any squad, doesn't matter how deep it is, look at City, you know, any squad, if you lose, there's certain players that any team, any squad would be, you know, markedly worse if they lost. You know, everyone's, we know who ours are, you know, Virgil went, you know, you might suddenly see us back to where we were pre-Virgil, perish the thought. But to be honest, it's not something that's keeping me up nights. And I think that that we are, it remains to be seen, but I feel like we're managing the squad and the season perfectly. And we will talk a little bit about the injuries later, but I mean, more sort of psychologically, I think that there's this huge run of games coming, and everybody knows how important it is between now and Christmas, and there's not really that many players there that you couldn't, I mean, there's the core of the squad, but the ones who were, as Damien said, like the Oxlade-Chamberlains and Keiters, that are, you know, sort of on the fringes, on the periphery, they're all, they can make a case for all of them if they were thrown in. They've got they now is what they, you know, they're peaking in terms of psychologically being ready. If I was thinking Gomez, you know, just before the international break, he comes on, and obviously it's a bit hoo-ha when he's away. Who else? Shaqiri, even, you know,
Lallana,
yeah. So I mean, so Shaqiri's probably one of the furthest away from actually playing, but there's we linked to Fraser in the week. Which is sort of seems maybe just goes a little like a like for like replacement. So if he was to be thrown in, he's got a massive point to prove, hasn't he? As if he didn't anyway. So I think Klopp, when he's talking in his interview, as you say, about doing what's right for each player. I think it is, but I do also think that he's got the team in his mind as well. And so if he knows essentially that he is trying to make everybody happy, but behind that there's also, well, I might keep him not happy for a month or two because I need him to be, you know, like a mad dog in November. So there's that. I don't think he'd say that in an interview, but I think that I suspect and we'll see. But I think things seem to be coalescing together to launch into a new phase after this international break, and that the injuries might, people dropping out of international football and things like that might be part of it.
Adam mentioned psychology there, and you know, the sort of the culture and the mindset at Liverpool currently, Paddy, does seem, you know, second to none, basically. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's often brought up. It's brought up in that interview I referenced. And sometimes, as you say, you wonder, as Adam's just touched on, you know, how much of it is spin, basically. They're never going to say, no, it's crap behind the scenes and everyone hates each other. Yeah. They're always going to say, no, it's great, it's fantastic and all the rest of it. And we'll never know because we're not in there. But nevertheless, I think the thing that stood out for me was that League Cup game against Arsenal, where it was young lads, it was people on the periphery, and yet they had that same spirit as the lads we've seen fighting for the first team. And to come back, you know, to come back, take it to penalties and then win the shootout, that to me said, this club is so right now. Because even if you did suffer a few injuries, like say, for example, you know, all of a sudden Curtis Jones had to play because there was a dearth of people in midfield or whatever, I think we'd all be calm with that because we've seen what he can do. And, it, you know, I say it so often, but it is, and you can't bang the drum often enough, it's a fantastic time to be a Red because the Reds are boss at every level, it seems.
Now, you get the sense as well that if, like you said, if it was an injury and Curtis Jones was to come in, the players would be all right with that as well. It's not just like a psychological thing amongst the fan base, and like everything, it's also the group of players are so together and so close. You get the sense that all the lads will just be like, yeah, but we'll look after him. We know what he's about. We train with him every day. He's a quality player. We can easily get through this game with Curtis in the side. But I think as well, the point that Damien makes as well sums up what's going through the club. It's, you see in Madrid, how they all feel part of it. And that's because each and every one of them's got a little story through the season. And you get the sense that if the season ended now, as it is with all of it, because we won the league with 9 points, but all of them already have sort of played a part. Like, you can even look at like the likes of Lallana, hasn't played too much football, comes on and scores against United. I thought he played really well against Villa in a new role or whatever. And that's another thing that I think the Klopp's done really well building into this phase. I know there has been a core group of players that have been relied on heavily, but you've seen Milner almost in most games be the first sub on 60. That's given someone half an hour off, but it's also given Milner half an hour every game to keep ticking over so he's ready when, for example, that Leicester game when he starts and he played brilliant and is ultimately the match winner. Origi seems to be coming on and being one of the people who can change games for us. So there's a lot of players now heading into this busy schedule that, although we haven't seen too much of them when you think about it, if you actually look deep into it, they've been playing here and then all been playing a part. So it's not just mentality, they're all physically ready now to go.
Yeah, and Shaqiri's got a mention already briefly in this chapter. I wanted to dig into his role really coming up, Damien. I mean, it's interesting. There's been little, not from him, by the way, but just sort of press and what have you. And a lot of dot joining goes on, and I know that. But he's back in training, and discounting the Community Shield, so far all he has to his name for the season are three substitute appearances. So 5 minutes at Burnley in August, 6 minutes against Newcastle at Anfield in September, and 4 minutes in the defeat away to Napoli. That's the last time we see him on the pitch for Liverpool. In general now, it's 34 games, or 34 appearances, I should say, for Liverpool. 6 goals, and to break that down, it's 15 starts. He's been on the pitch 19 times as a sub, and he's been subbed off 9 times.
Yeah.
What do you make of him so far, and what do you think we can expect from him for the rest of the season?
I think we just signed him as a luxury player. It's very clear Jürgen doesn't trust him defensively. I don't think you can say anything different. You know, there was a game where he contributed a lot offensively last season, Southampton at home. And because there was gaps in midfield, Jürgen lashed him off, and we all thought he must have been injured, but it was tactical. He's a fine player. Great touch, great eye for the pass, eye for the goal, and I just think he's a perfect substitute with regard to this. And the stats bear that out, that when he starts a game, he gets taken off. But he seems to get a lot of, he seems to get a lot of trust if he's coming on, you know. If you, we're going to play against a lot of teams who are going to play very defensive, and we're going to try and wear them out, and then you're talking to someone who's going to come on and have some invention, who's got a shot on them, who's got an eye for the pass, who is going to be reliable when we don't have to defend, when the game is getting played exclusively in the opposition's half. Shaqiri ticks all those boxes. So if you're looking at, if Shaqiri was available on the market and playing for somebody else, you'd say, oh, what a boss sub then, and he can come in and he can play instead of Mane, or he can play instead of Salah. But obviously Jürgen doesn't trust him, and that side of the game, because we play so energetically, because the players really do race about and press from the front and, you know, chase back when needed, and obviously that's the bit of the game where the glass is half empty for him. I think it's easy journalism and not unreasonable to say, well, he might not be happy, he's done a season of that and he didn't quite break through. Okay, so he wins the big cup, the season starts again, he might say, well, okay, we'll see how it goes again for Amir, and for whatever reason it hasn't happened. But it could be just that he's genuinely injured, and he could be that he gets a run of games.
Yeah,
you know, and then talking about, you know, Adam before saying, you know, you're getting linked with Fraser, is that one in, one out, is it a like for like, is it another sub for another sub? I think it's just the nature of it. If you look at our front three, who in the world would you swap any of them for?
Yeah.
It's just an unfortunate position, and his gamble is he'll back himself, fair play to him, and his gamble is that there might be one of those players out for a spell, and it gives him a chance to establish himself, and it just hasn't happened.
Is he one of the ones, Adam, that you're talking about? Do you think he's, you know, sort of gnashing away, ready to go, rearing to go, wants to show what he can do?
I think he will be, because he is a good pro, and it's a bit of a shame what's happened maybe since this time last year to him, because as Damien was talking then, I was thinking about, you know, he comes on and wins the game against United at Anfield, doesn't he, which is, you know, that you know, I'm happy with anyone who ever does that, basically.
Hear.
And he's been, I think that in previous to him joining us, he was maybe seen as a bit of a bad influence in certain clubs. But, like, you know, he's just been to it. There's just had an international break, and he's not moaning to the Swiss press or anything. So, I think there is. It's 50-50 for me. I'm not sure. I think Klopp said he's lost a bit of weight, because I know Klopp doesn't like muscly lads, does he? So it might just be that Klopp was telling him he's too hench. So yeah, I'm really not sure. It's a 50-50 one for me for Shaqiri, but I do think that he's definitely in that bracket for me of if he did get his chance, and this is the lucky position we're in, that we've got because, you know, in 2010 or something, Shaqiri would be our best player, and we'd have to play him. We'd probably be playing him half injured now. So yeah, it is a roll of the dice really for Shaqiri. But I'd love to see him come and play a part this month, because, yeah, he's done some great things. I was thinking on the contrary though about how bad he was at Anfield. I think Phil Blund tweeted it, how bad he was at Anfield against Barcelona. He sets up one of the goals, but he couldn't kick it that night. Yeah, and that's
apart from once.
Well, he puts it onto Gini's head, doesn't he? But yeah, he's and then we've hardly seen him since. But, yeah, he was awful.
What do you make of it all, Paddy? I mean, I personally don't think there's any chance that he goes, no matter what. I mean, you don't know where these rumblings come from. It may be agents, it may not. It may just be people creating headlines, joining dots, like I said before. But either way, you think if anyone comes sniffing in January, it makes no sense, does it, to get ribbed, because we are where we are. I mentioned at the top, all the competitions we're in, all the competitions we're going for, how well we started the league campaign. you can't see him letting anyone go, because why would you? Would you? You know what I mean? In this situation.
Yeah, no, I really, really like Shaqiri. I think I always think sometimes maybe like, do I not know enough about footy? Because I thought this time last year, I thought he was great, and like Klopp's obviously seeing something I'm not. And I understand there must be things defensively, but I think what he's suffered from most has been more than anything the change of formation. This time last year, we were playing 4-2-3-1, where he was more of a wide midfielder. Because even when we signed him, he was never ever going to get into that front three. I think even Klopp said when we signed him, he was like, you know, he's not a replacement or a substitute for any of them, because he just hasn't got the pace to replicate what they offer. But this time last year, when he was playing more of a wide midfield role, I thought he played really, really well. But yeah, like you said, it doesn't make sense for anyone. If you read Dan Shaqiri, you look at last season and thinking, from virtually February onwards, he's frozen out and not getting looking, but then starts a Champions League semi-final second leg and gets that moment that he'll always look back on when he puts it on when Adam's head. So you can always think, well, yeah, I did play my part in that, because without my cross, when the momentum just after we've scored, we might not go on to the final and then win it. So he must be looking at it thinking, I might have a part to play for a league title or another European Cup. And again, with the club, I just think Klopp hasn't done too much January business in or out ever since he came. There's obviously the obvious ones like Coutinho, but to him, I just think he thinks, well, I like these lads and I like the group, and even if Shaqiri's making Mo Salah laugh till like July, it's worth keeping him around. Do you know what I mean? If no one's missing Shaqiri, if it's worth just for someone to be like, oh, we like him and he's our mate and I want to win the league with him, well, then it's worth keeping him for the sake of just selling him to someone. Because he's one of them players that he's always going to knock around the Premier League or one of Europe's top leagues. There's always going to be someone who wants to buy Shaqiri. So I think it's one of them. I think it's a problem that Klopp will just say, listen, we'll worry about in the summer.
I used to think that about Moreno as well. Yeah. We get Moreno for a while just because he's on a laugh at work.
Yeah, obviously.
Just every day, he's just a mad lad.
But Shaqiri as well, you know, Damien is fantastic from set pieces.
Oh, his quality, yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned there, you know, the times he has got in, you know, it's just been as a late sub and things like that. But again, it's not bad to have that luxury, is it, to bring someone on that quality at that stage of a game?
Yeah, but when you start a conversation, you start talking about, well, how many goals hasn't he got, and how many starts hasn't he got, and how many times he gets substituted off them, you start talking about the negatives and why those reasons exist. You spin it round, the number of games that we've got, and like we're talking about, this guy's really got a lot of quality in the last third. He's not going to dig it out, he's not going to help the fullback out, but he's got a lot going. Now, Liverpool are going to play a lot of games where the opposition are back now. Mm. If we say, for example, Brighton play defensively at Anfield, you know, when we play them, they've got them coming up soon, and they make a good fist of it, and we need someone to come on and change the game, or we want someone who's continually trying to wear these out because he's looking for a pass and he's dragging people here, and he's exactly that. And given this run of games that we've got, and given that we haven't got any margin for error, because we know behind us is a world-class worthy champions Manchester City team, and we've got to keep getting these points on the board, then we need, you know, you'd be looking, if Liverpool was to bring somebody in, you'd want to bring someone in who's at least as good as him. So as long as he's happy there, and as long as he's prepared to say, well, I think there's enough games in this season for me, I think there's a couple of finals for this club and I'm going to be a part of one of them, and there's a chance for me to contribute to a Premier League challenge and possibly even a winner's medal, as long as he's happy there, and as long as Jürgen's sprinkling him on enough, then he's the perfect squad man to have. If you get disheartened, you could understand it. He's a seasoned pro. You know, it's a short-term job, and he's got talent, so go out there and, you know, Liverpool would have to. But it doesn't make any sense if we get rid of him unless we get someone in who's at least as good, because the quality he's got is great. You know, and he's a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, I think on Damien's point as well, I think the players really like playing with him, especially this time last year. He was one of them. You'd bring him on and the players would be buzzing off him. Because I think one of the problems people had when we were linked with signing him in the first place was that they thought maybe he'd come in and be shooting from everywhere, and like he'd make it all about him. He was at a big club now, but I think he came and he realised there's loads of people here who are better than me, but I'm still a good footballer. And
everybody passes to him, don't they?
Yeah. Everyone passes to him because they know they're going to get it back, because he gets the ball and thinks, oh, how can I put Mo Salah in? Because he just gives it to me now. I'm not good enough.
And Salah goes and stands near him as
well. I noticed that loads last year, so I think he's worth keeping around anyway as an option, because I think players really, really do like playing with him. I think he knows his role in the squad, and I think when he plays, he knows his limitations, and I think he knows who's better than him and who's to pass to him. I think it's always a good option to have.
Well, it's good to have him back in training, and he was at a community event in Kirby this week that we went down to, and we spoke to him there, and he seemed in good spirits. So let's hope he does stay and does contribute, because as the lads around the table have said, he's done some good stuff in red. Let's hope there's more to come. Listen, we are always banging on about the Anfield app and how you should listen to more of it, but there are of course other podcasts available, and we are happy to plug one here. We are plugging Jamie Carragher's new podcast. He's got a podcast out called The Greatest Game, Nominally, the idea is that he speaks to people in football about their greatest game, either that they watched or that they played in. But as you can imagine with Carra, it's a lot more than that. And the one he's done with Henderson in particular, I think, is an absolute cracker, well worth your time. But John spoke to Jamie Carragher about his new podcast, so here's that.
It's John Gibbons for The Weekender. I'm delighted to be joined by Jamie Carragher, who's here to promote your thing now, isn't it? You're normally helping us also, but I mean, to be honest, I thought all these years you were coming in to do us a favour, do you know what I mean? To be nice, but really, you were eyeing us up, seeing what we were up to, so you could launch your own podcast.
Of course I was, yeah. Taking all the good stuff and the bad stuff. And
plenty of that.
Yeah. But no, listen, you were a great help, actually. You know, speaking to you, listening how it works, how you do these things. And to be honest, I'd had enough of radio, listening to the radio. And so I got into podcasts, spoke to you a little bit, the lads involved in that, and started listening to a few different ones. Of course, the Anfield Rap. I like the Totally Football show. I think James Richardson does that on a Monday.
Yeah.
With some people on there, Michael Cox and people. I really enjoy that. So I listened to that, and then I just thought of an idea of, obviously I do TV, I write a column in the paper, and I thought, well, another media now is a podcast, but doing it differently in that it's not my opinions as such, it's more me having a chat with someone, listening more to them, and also me listening is the right word, and that learning from, you know, other people, footballers, celebrity fans, other people's in sport, and you're actually taking things from them, and, you know, for your own education in some ways, but also getting stuff, having a bit of a laugh, putting my own experiences in it, and that's why I thought, you know, a podcast would work. But as I said, being on Sky and writing a column, it's always, you feel like sometimes you're ramming your opinion down people's throats. Sometimes you think, oh, am I talking too much? Am I involved in too much? So it was a case of actually maybe do this, but do it differently. And as I said, probably more media skills in trying to actually ask the right questions and actually getting stuff, you know, out of people.
What I thought surprised me a little bit and I thought was interesting is that you go with Thierry Henry first off, and I'm like, oh, here we go. He's going to get all his famous mates on, the biggest stars. He, you know, grew the phone book. And then the second one's Paddy McGuinness, who obviously doesn't play, but so you've obviously, you don't want to just do the big names in terms of football, you know, it's people who've got an interest in football as well.
Yeah, it's different things really, looking at, and sometimes you scramble around speaking to people even now, thinking who could we get on, who's got a good story to tell. And you've listened to Thierry Henry one, there was very little Arsenal in it really about that great team or the Invincibles. I don't want to talk about the Invincibles. I don't want to talk with Stevie or to Istanbul. It's a bit, you know, we know that. I know I'd be bored listening to that, or, you know, just different things. I think the Henry one was really good, and that, you know, stuff about his dad and being a young player, I thought was really fascinating. So that was me, as I said, educating myself and learning stuff and how things work. So it was, that was good. And the Paddy McGuinness one was just, you know, more of a laugh. So I think it was interesting seeing the reaction to the Paddy McGuinness one, because I think everyone thought that Thierry Henry one was really good, and he was. I thought he was fantastic, but it was a serious football chat, whereas the Paddy McGuinness one was more of a laugh.
Mm.
So I didn't know if people were just thinking, like, they're going to get that every week. Yeah. So, I think it's difficult to have that every week. And to be honest, you're only, you know, the person who comes in, it's what he's like and what you want to get from them.
Do you feel you can come at things differently as a footballer than, say, a journalist would or a supporter would? Because when we interview people, and to be fair, it's Rob Aweir who always hammers it into us and says, come at it from a fan's point of view. Don't go in there and try and be a journalist, because, A, what's the point? There's loads of people doing that. And B, you're just not going to do it as well. Mm. So we always think, what will fans want? How can we come at it from an angle of a fan? Is that what you've sort of taught yourself or trying to tell yourself to do as well? So if you're speaking to Thierry Henry, how can I relate to him as a footballer rather than, as you say, just ask him, oh, with the Invincibles, what was it like?
Yeah, I think we've got a big advantage, ex-players in the media now, because if you look at, say, me and Gary, on a Friday night show, we're interviewing managers, we're just, you know, getting a bit of experience of doing different things. And one of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast, asking questions rather than just answering them, and just trying to make yourself all round better at the job you do, because Gary's not going to go back into management for obvious reasons, and I'm not going to go into coaching or management. This is what I do, the media, if you like. So I want to be as good as I can be at what I do, and can you learn the other aspects of it, in terms of, as I say, getting stuff from people. And I think the advantage we have is, if I get Thierry Henry there, he can't just fuck me off with a not an answer on something that I think he probably could do with a journalist, or you know, come up with cliches.
Yeah.
I think they'd feel like they've got to give you something, or we're both in the same game. We know what we're at, so I'm not going to, you know, I'm probably have a bit more respect for me asking a question than a journalist. Not because I'm better asking questions, because I've played against them or whatever it may be. So I'm just hoping I could bring that to it, really, where you're probably getting a little bit more out of people.
I think that's fair, and I think that's something that I haven't taught myself really. But you know, if someone gives the whole, oh yeah, it's, we all got on all the time, you can just go off, do us a favour. Do you know what I mean? Because you can
also
know what
it was
like.
A good one was obviously Jordan Henderson. So I listened to it last night, and at the end of the show, we asked people what's the greatest game they've played in and the best five-a-side team. So he's, and Jordan Henderson's the nicest man in the world, and he's picking his five-a-side team, and he's going, Alisson, Van Dijk, and I had to cut him short. I said, right, no players from now. So you had to keep, he was just sitting on the fence all the time. Now, probably a journalist would have to just sit there and go, okay, he's going to pick Alisson, Van Dijk, Salah, whoever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can get into that. No, we're not having, you know, so you can add a little bit more, and he'd probably, well, he did.
You're making him pick Lee Fatimo.
Yeah. No, please pick me.
I know you're competitive as well. I remember last year.
We're top of the league, yeah.
So I remember last year when you did the Legends game, and you did a bit of a five-a-side in the gym in Melwood for the press, and you're battering into people and upsetting a few lads, I think. So I know you're still competitive, you still got that. I mean, now you're doing podcasts, do you want to be the best? Do you want to be number one?
Oh yeah, of course, no point doing it without it, isn't it? So keep an eye on the chat a little bit. So no, the Thierry Henry one was... went really big. Paddy McGuinness's one has done really well. I'm sure Jordan's will do really well on the back of obviously how well Liverpool are doing, and you know, the big game against Man City, was heavily involved in that also. But I mean, the podcast is, as I said, I started listening to them, but I only don't know that many. I only listen to The Sport, your one, and the Totally Football Show, maybe a couple of others. But there's really big podcast shows, and everyone was telling me about just a fella called Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I haven't got a clue, you know what I mean? So I looked on it. So when Thierry Henry's one, the greatest game, went above Joe Rogan, and thought that we made a decent start, because he's quite he's big
massive.
On these
huge
podcasts. So that's the target now. Can we beat Joe Rogan every week? We forgot about the Anfield rap now.
Fair play. We're like Everton. Yeah, bottom half. Do you enjoy the format? Because obviously, I know how much you enjoy telly, and I know, you know, you've obviously excelled in it, but it's very hitting your marks, isn't it? It's like, we've got 8 minutes to make your points. Are you enjoying the freedom of, well, this is as long as it is? And
Yeah, I do, and it's relaxed, and I think the people I've spoke to, they enjoy it. Because as soon as you put a camera in somewhere, everyone just, you know, everyone just tenses up a little bit. They're scared about what they're going to say. Even though it's still going to go out to hear what they say, it's a lot more relaxed. If you're doing a newspaper column with no cameras, but you've also got a journalist next to you as well who's chipping in with different things. So I think as soon as the journalist's in the room as well, people are not quite as open, or certainly not as open as they've been on the podcast, because it's almost like you're chatting to your mate and there's a tape recorder in the middle. We know that that's there, but it's a bit more... Well, I certainly think I've got a bit more out of people than I would with a journalist there or a TV camera.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I'm halfway through the Paddy McGuinness one, so I like enjoyed the Burnham Park chat at the moment. But I mean, the Henry one, obviously, I've listened to, and I think he's great, and I think the chat is, and I can tell, you can tell when it's good, because it gets better the longer it goes. And that's not to say it wasn't good at the start, but you can hear him relaxing into it and just sort of enjoying it. And as you say, almost forgetting that it's being recorded, I think, and it's just a nice chat amongst two friends, albeit amazing.
No, it is. We've basically got 10 in the can, if you like. So we've done the first two. So the next 8 will take us till after Christmas. I think we'll probably have a little break at Christmas, and then just, as I said, just working out now who else we can get. So basically, every few weeks we get one that'll probably take us towards the end of the season, and then I think after summer off, and then see what we do with the start of next season, and try and keep them going. But it's not easy in a podcast. If you're doing your own podcast, it's just you, isn't it? When you're interviewing people, you obviously need people to come in. It's not as easy to just say, okay, we're just, you know, rocking up at this day and this time. You've got to go and see them, try and get the right people on as well. And So it's, you know, I think it'll be a challenge going forward, you know, to keep the guests of the right quality.
I'm sure you've got that hit list there of people you want.
You're on it, don't worry.
Jesus. Yeah, you won't beat Joe Rogan then, mate, I tell you. No, but I mean, best of luck with it. And I know, like, when you obviously when you do something, you throw your full self into it. So I've enjoyed it so far, but I'm sure it'll be brilliant going forward. But it's available. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple. It's everywhere that you normally find podcasts, isn't it?
Yes, you know more about that than me, so I keep getting told when I tweet it, make sure you put Spotify podcast and iTunes and all that. So I'm still getting new to this world. I actually put something on yesterday on my Instagram. I put a picture of me and Paddy McGuinness, and I said, to listen to the full podcast, go to my link in the bio on my Instagram. And then I went to my link in the bio the next day, and it was actually my newspaper column.
You're just so used to saying
just
that,
like,
for
oh,
me.
No. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
well, it's doing really well, despite Jamie's best efforts on marketing. It's doing great, and I can't wait to listen to the Jordan one, and I'm sure the next few will be bossed too.
All right, thank you.
And it's John Gibbons here with another insert, another read through, and this time it is Football Index. I think this is the first Football Index one we've done, so thanks a lot to them for supporting the Anfield Wrap. And Football Index is a stock market for buying shares in footballers. So if you think you know a lot about football, you know who's going to be the next big thing or who's going to be emerging on the football scene, then this is a way to make money out of it. What you do is you buy shares in players that you think will perform, and if you know your football, obviously their value will rise, and then you can sell them. So it's exactly like the stock market, but for footballers, and it's all about their performance and their value. And you can even win payouts when they score and assist and when they perform in the media, it says. There we go. I'm not quite sure what constitutes performing in the media there, but, you know, have a look out for that. If you do want to play, go to footballindex.co.uk or download the app and use the code ANFIELD or sign on and to get £500 money back guarantee. So that's a £500 money back guarantee, and start trading in something you love, obviously, today with Football Index. Do remember that it's for 18 plus only, and this is a form of gambling, so please gamble responsibly. If you want more on that, you can go to begambleaware.org. But do get stuck in. I've not played it yet. I've had a little look. It looks really interesting. I've noticed that, for example, Trent Alexander-Arnold is close to doubled recent over the last year or so. Harry Maguire is another one whose stock's risen. So if you spotted those before anyone else did, you could have made a few quid of it. I know Neil's brother plays, actually, so I might get him on. We've got one of these due next week, so I might say to Neil, get your brother on and get him to talk about it. But it does look good fun. It's also the only football stock market out there at the moment. It looks, you know, so it's the one you want to play. It looks a good laugh. I'm going to try and make sure to do have a go. But as I say, Neil's brother is already playing and I think has won a few quid on it as well. So I might see if Neil wants to speak to him. But if that sounds like it's for you, then it's footballindex.co.uk or download the app. But make sure you use the code ANFIELD when you sign up to get a £500 money back guarantee. But yeah, that's Football Index. Thanks a lot to them for supporting the Anfield Wrap. And it's John Gibbons again, and we're doing the Weekender Quiz. And the Weekender Quiz is brought to you in association with Last Fan Standing. That is a posh way of saying that we're working with Last Fan Standing at the moment. And it's a quiz app on your phone. Hopefully a few of you have downloaded it already. I know some of you have, because some of you have won. They do cash prizes every match day. For their match day predicted quiz, they do cash prizes, and I know quite a few have won, including someone who scooped 100 quid on their own the other week, which isn't too bad at all. So yeah, I hope you're enjoying playing. This weekend, before I forget, I'm hosting the quiz on Friday. So every night at 7 p.m. they do a quiz through the week, which is just sort of general LFC knowledge. Friday nights, or tonight if you like, is all to do with previous games against Crystal Palace. And I know this because I hosted it. And then also I'm hosting the predictor quiz tomorrow, which you can play up to 3 hours before kickoff. So anytime from midday until 3 o'clock, if you want to play, do get involved. And if you can guess what's going to happen in the upcoming game and you can get 8 questions right, then you can win a share. Well, I say of £100, but this week, every time someone new plays, it goes up £1, so the pot could be pretty good. So it's a good week to get involved, good week to tell your friends, and if you're a new player, obviously it's completely free to play as well. It's free to download, and you get some free tokens to go into that predicted quiz as well. But without further ado, and I spoke a lot there, who's been waiting very patiently, Peter Lloyd is going to play the Last Man Standing quiz with us now, and compete for a place on the leaderboard, and also get some merch thrown in as well. So Peter, hiya, you're right.
Yeah, I'm not bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Where are you calling from, by the way? I haven't asked you.
I'm calling from Oxford, where I've been living for about 8 years.
You're living there for 8 years. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's got chock full of boozers, so I can't complain.
It is. It has got a lot of pubs. Do you know Rob and Neil are big Oxford fans? Neil's a big Inspector Morse man. So he likes to go to Oxford and pretend he's Morse. And Rob just likes anywhere where there's a lot of pubs in close proximity. And he doesn't really care that there's not going a lot going on after 11 o'clock because he goes to bed at 9. So so it's perfect for both of them. So they like, you know, they'll... So Neil's away at the moment, but if he wasn't, they'd somehow manage to get Palace away into an overnight stay in Oxford. So there you are. So that is my Oxford information, but you obviously like it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I keep hoping that Oxford and Liverpool draw each other. They keep managing to avoid each other in all the cup draws, which is really frustrating. Yeah, got really close last time out.
Yeah, because Oxford have had a few decent cup runs, haven't they?
Yeah. They played Tranmere and been to see them play Tranmere, and I'm going to watch them play City in a few weeks as well. So, yeah. It's close, but not quite.
One day. Anyway, so Peter, we're going to play now. So basically, I've got 10 questions in front of me, and you need to keep getting them right. As soon as you get one wrong, then you are out. And yeah, you go onto the leaderboard. And I keep saying this leaderboard, it doesn't physically exist, but I will do it one day, and we'll see how you go. So you know, so we'll see how you do and see how you do compared to I think Nicky is still first, I think, but I'm probably wrong. Anyway, so Peter, the first one is, which of these roads is adjacent to Liverpool's home stadium? Is it Goodison Road or Anfield Road?
Anfield Road.
Yeah, it is Anfield Road. I don't think there is a Goodison Road, actually. I don't think that exists. But obviously Anfield's over the park from Goodison Park. But yeah, Anfield Road is adjacent to Liverpool's home stadium. So you've got one, so we're flying. Who made the assist for Salah's goal against City? Was it Robertson or Mane? So Salah's header sent us 2-0 up against City. Who put the cross in?
That was Robbo.
It was Andy Robertson, a belting cross indeed. Which team did Coutinho leave Liverpool for? Bayern Munich, Real Madrid or Barcelona?
Barca.
Yeah, he's at Bayern now, but he went to Barca first. Which of these clubs did Klopp manage? Eintracht Frankfurt, Salzburg or Mainz?
Mainz.
Yeah, started at Mainz, now he's here. Liverpool's all-time top goal scorer in the Premier League is Owen, Fowler or Suarez? Owen Fowler.
I think it was Fowler.
It is Fowler. We got 5. Come on, lad. Who scored City's goal in the recent 3-1 defeat at Anfield? Was it Aguero, Silva, or Sterling?
Silva.
It is. Number 7. This season, Liverpool have on average spent over 50% of their time in the opposition's third of the pitch. Is that true or false? So let's get our heads around that. So this season, Liverpool have spent, on average, more than 50% of their time in the opposition's third of the pitch. Is that true or false?
I mean, I want it to be true. oh, my God. Why not? Let's say true.
It's false, I'm afraid. I love your optimism. but that would be absolutely insane. It is only 34% in the final third. Hey, but you've been positive, Peter, and no one could fault you for it. And also, you've got 6 right, which isn't too bad indeed. So, you know, if we do semi-finals or quarter-finals or anything, I think you've got a decent chance of getting in there. But there you are. Do us a favour and message me your shirt size and your address, and I will send you something out in the post as well. But thanks for playing. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
No worries. Before you go, are you confident for Saturday?
Yeah, of course. We're usually quite good at dealing with these post-international game fixtures these days. So, yeah, pretty confident.
Yeah, I mean, that's worth sort of pointing out, really. I think we always think, oh, coming back after an international break. But first of all, it's the same for most teams now. I mean, yeah, every team in the Premier League have got internationals to sort of some degree. And also, if you look at our results last season in particular, they were very good. And also, obviously, incredible in terms of playing teams sort of outside the top 6. We normally swat them away. So I am confident too. But yeah, no, nice one for playing, Peter. And yeah, we'll keep playing these over the next few weeks. Keep an eye out on the Facebook subscribers if you do want to play. Sorry I missed last week. It was completely my fault. But we got Peter in the end. And yeah, up to Reds. Hello, it's John Gibbons for the weekend. And it is the Harry's Insert. Harry's have been partnering us for a long time now. We do appreciate their support. And I also appreciate getting Harry's through the post. It has happened to me recently. I've had my new blades through the post and my new shave gel through the post. And I'm getting stuck in. And it's great gear. It's very, very good. It's a close shave, it's a good shave, and for someone like myself who's got sensitive skin, it's very much appreciated, everything that they put into their product. Just to give you a bit of background on Harry's, to ensure the best quality products, Harry's bought a factory in Germany that's been making blades for over 100 years, so this is where they're at the moment. The factory team is more than 600 engineers, designers, craftsmen and chemists to make Harry's products from the finest materials and ingredients, and all of this ensures a quality shave at a fair price. So we encourage you to sign up now. You can sign up and get your trial set for just £3.95 if you want to get started shaving with Harry's today. In that trial set, you will get the weighted ergonomic handle, the 5 precision engineer blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, the rich lathering shave gel, and the travel blade cover. That comes all in your trial set, which is just £3.95. And it is really good. I've stuck with them. They sent us the very first one, but I've since signed up and stuck with them because it is an excellent shave. And as I say, I'm someone who cuts easily. I'm a very sensitive soul, as you guys know. So I am someone who does appreciate and need that rich lathering shave gel that they provide. So yeah, thanks very much for Harry's, for obviously for sending me some new stuff through, but also obviously for supporting the Anfield Wrap. If you want to support us by supporting them, go to harrys.com/Anfield. That's harrys.com/Anfield, and they will send that trial set straight over to you and you will never look back.
Hiya, this is our little weekender insert. Here's Josh Sexton, Andy Heaton, and delighted to say we're joined by Stephen Darby. Stephen, I understand you were at the Man City game at the weekend, the Liverpool Man City game. I know Andy's just been asking you off air what you think about the Reds in the title race this season. What did you make of the game, first and foremost, I suppose?
So it was a great game. Thought Liverpool were brilliant, especially first half. I think the intensity that they play is incredible, and hopefully you can that'll continue.
And do you think at your peak as a player you could have made a cut in this Liverpool side, or
no? No, I think you see now, obviously, the way they're playing now and how Jürgen Klopp has got them playing. I think that's the rewards from the hard work over like the last two or three seasons. No, it's been building, it's been coming, and I think I won the European Cup last year. I think that's just give them that belief that they can win trophies, and hopefully that they can go on this year and win the Premier League.
For someone who's actually been on the journey and not just watched from the outside, what's it? I'm talking specifically about Trent. I mean, what's it like at the start? So you're at the club, you go in, you're 7-8 years of age, you go through all that coaching, all that pressure, all those games. To step out, and you obviously famously made the Champions League. What's it like stepping out at Anfield in front of a packed crowd?
There's nothing better than sharing a Champions League night under the floodlights. Singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" with the Champions League music. It's what you dream of. You just mentioned Trent there. It's what he's been dreaming of as a young kid, and to get his opportunity, he's been unbelievable. But to also stay there and what he's done, worked his way into the England setup, and to win the Champions League at such a young age, he's been unbelievable. So
how must he be feeling as a local lad who's like, basically, you know, he's seen as, and we said previously, like, there's nothing better than a Liverpool side and Liverpool crowd likes more than a Liverpool son in the team. I mean, how can you describe what he must feel like going through this at the minute?
So it's what he's dreamt of, it's what he's been dreaming of since he was a young kid, and that's why he's been working so hard. And I think, especially being a local lad and carrying that extra pressure, the fans love to see the local lads come through, they can relate to them, and for him to be playing week in, week out at the level that he is, it's brilliant. But he's also got that pressure and that expectation on his shoulders, so I think that's what separates the top players from, say, the good players and the average players. He's proven over the last couple of years that he can deal with that pressure of playing at the top level.
How much do you rate him? Because we had Jimmy Carragher on a show quite recently, and he was talking about Andy Robertson and Trent, and he was saying, like, as much as Robertson's seen as like you're the typical aggressive up and down fullback, he said Trent's just like, so I mean, what do you think? Trent's like so much more. He's almost like a midfield playmaker playing at right back.
He is. I think he's got everything. You look at his pace, he gets forward, he can put a cross in. Say the amount of assists that Trent has, and also Robertson as well. They're a massive part of the way Liverpool play. As you say, I think you could put Trent anywhere on the pitch and he'd still be the best player.
What do you reckon then? Do you reckon Liverpool for the title this season, or?
Let's hope so.
Not nailing
you, can't call it
mash,
now, yeah. Can you? But they've put themselves in a great position, but that's all it is. They've now got to forget what's gone on over the past few months and look forward and really kick on and try and make that gap a little bit bigger, so it's a little bit more comfortable for everyone watching. But I mean, as I say, they put themselves in a great position, so hopefully they can capitalise on that now.
Just going off last season and it being so close, and obviously the game in Kiev, there's two questions really. How much do you think the European Cup win in Madrid will be for them to kick on and maybe to go that little step further this year in the league? And also, how important do you think it is to have the experienced players they've got in this Liverpool side? So you've got like Henderson's there, James Milner, who's won a title at Manchester City's there. Just having that know-how when it gets a little bit fraught and a little bit on top, to have people who've been there and done it.
That's crucial. And I think winning the Champions League last season, that'll give the squad that belief that they can compete and they can win, you know, for the top honours. And hopefully they can use that experience from last season and take that into this season, albeit a different competition. But they've got that experience now of what it takes. And you just mentioned there, you know, Henderson, Milner, you know, and even the young lads that are in the squad, like Trent, he's got that experience now over the last couple of years, and hopefully he can draw on that when needed this year to hopefully do the job.
You've got a bit of a split. You say you were at the game against City. I believe you were there with your wife. There's a bit of a split interest there. What was the reaction like when Liverpool scored the third?
She didn't jump up anyway. She was she stood up, so that wasn't too bad, and thankfully we were still married driving home. But no, she took it well. It was funny when Liverpool were playing Villa and City went 2-1 up, and obviously Liverpool were still getting beat 1-0. She was made up, but 15 minutes later she wasn't too happy, so I'm not sure she'll be happy me mentioning that, but it was a great weekend, and the way Liverpool are playing at the minute, they do look unstoppable, and hopefully that'll continue.
Stephen, of course, the reason you're here today is on behalf of the Derby Rim MND Foundation. Can you just give people a little bit of a backstory of that foundation from the point of view of yourself and of Chris as well?
Yes, when I was diagnosed last September 2018, Chris Rimmer, who's got a good friend, who's a friend of my brother, Kev, he got in touch and offered his support. He knew what I'd be going through. Chris has been battling MND for 5 years now, and unfortunately, you know, he can't move his arms or his legs. He can't feed himself, and he's on a breathing apparatus. So that just shows how brutal the disease is. But Chris, being Chris, and the man that he is, he offered support to me because he knew what I'd be going through and what my wife and the family would be going through. So he shared his experiences and all the advice that he had over the years with MND, and straight away his attitude was similar to mine, as in, right, we'll put it to one side and look forward and try and do everything that we can to make a positive impact. And that's obviously what's led us to set the foundation up together. We felt doing it together we'd be stronger, and obviously we sit here today with the Derby Rim MND Foundation, and it's great to be doing it with Chris. He's been an unbelievable support, and the support that we've had since announcing the foundation has been incredible, and we can't thank everyone enough.
And what's that been like, the actual sort of setting up of the foundation? I know there's probably been a few sort of obstacles along the way, but how has that process been for yourself and Chris?
We've been very fortunate, the fact that we've had Matthew Buck, who's a great friend of mine, close friend. He's helped us massively with the PFA, like Sir Gordon Taylor, John Hudson, John Bramall. They've helped us all massively in setting up the foundation, and the support that they've given us, probably couldn't have done it without them. So we've had that support there, and that's been massive. And now we launched in October. Hopefully we can push things on now and really make a difference.
And myself and Andy were down at the launch day at Anfield in October, and one of the things that stood out was the sort of scale of the support that you've been receiving, and I mean that in the sort of most literal sense, in terms of the amount of people who've gone out and got behind the initiatives and took part in different walks and bingo and things like that, just to try and raise money for you. That must be so sort of heartening to you to see that many people coming out and you know, physically, you know, putting their bodies on the line, I suppose, to raise some money for the foundation.
it is. It's amazing to see, and the support we've had has been. It's really has been overwhelming. Say from family and friends, people we don't even know who've got in touch and are doing fundraisers. They say a load of different ones, from walks to bonkers bingo, and you know, the list's endless. And so the support that we've had from the football community as well, obviously from Liverpool, Bradford City, Swindon, but also from fans and clubs up and down the country, the messages that we had, we can't thank everyone enough. And it's with that support that it'll enable us to make a huge impact and a positive impact on M&D, to try and, you know, raise awareness, to try and support individuals and families who are battling M&D, and also to donate money towards research to help find a treatment and a cure.
And then setting up the foundation, you must have sort of got to the point where maybe in October you were quite relieved, you felt like the hard part is done. But what's sort of next for the foundation now, and what's the next steps that you have to take to you know, keep pushing on and keep spreading that message?
Yeah, so it's finally now set up, and hopefully now we can keep pushing things forward. So we've had an amazing response from the family, friends, and from the football community, and the support we've had's been incredible. So hopefully now we can keep pushing that on. We'll have a number of events, a number of official Derby Rimmer M&D Foundation events, which if people want to have a look, they can go on the website at the Derby Rimmer mnd.co.uk, and they can also reach us if they've got any questions or they want to find out how they can raise money. They can find us at inquiries@derbyrimmermnd.co.uk. So hopefully now we can start making a positive impact and making a difference.
I think you got it all right with the plugs there anyway. Well, yeah, we'll leave more information for that in the descriptions of this show, of course. And anybody who does want to get involved, you know, you can do by using #AttackMND on social media. Obviously follow all the Derby Rimmer MND pages on social media as well, and make sure you get behind what is a great cause.
Big thanks to Stephen Darby there, a very brave man, as I'm sure you'll agree, and we'll be doing a lot more with him on the Derby Rimmer Foundation, so look out for that. Now we are going to talk about Crystal Palace, about being reunited in a football ground with Roy Hodgson once again. Lots of people still like Roy, don't they? Lots of people around the country love Roy, love his books, love his big watches, love his shredded wheat hair. And lots of people at Liverpool still don't like him.
Never have.
There's a piece in The Athletic this week, really, really positive about him. There's a piece written by me, really, really not positive about him. Damien, you've already given it away. You're not a fan of the man.
No, I obviously don't know him. Yeah. When he was doing our press conferences, he sounded like he was, you know, doing something out of Jackanory, like, you know, like a kid's, you know, he's like making everyone feel better than that, you know. And he's had a very successful, very long, distinguished career. He was just never in a million years a manager who should have been within a million miles of the Anfield hot seat. We were in a bad place as a club at the time. It was probably Hobson's choice. I've got nothing against the fella. I don't look out and hope his teams get beat or think he's like dreaming of beating us and putting one over on us. I just get on with your career, great. And he's at a club where they seem to like him, and there's plenty of clubs around like that. So sound, his style of football isn't something I particularly appreciate. I'm quite happy with what we've got. Let's press on and let's beat his team.
I mean, the interview in The Athletic is revealing in some respects, Adam, and that he's still going on about training sessions that he nicked off Terry Venables and things like that. And I mean, I'm very, very glad that he is not our manager and Jurgen Klopp is.
He's amazing. I don't think about him as much as I used to. But
you used to exchange a lot of pictures of him, didn't you?
Twitter. Johnny sent me one the other day. But there must be from this week. There's like a kid who's got both arms and legs around him, and he's like, and you can just see it's Roy's back. It's like there's this delighted kid who's quite
that's
old.
On yeah. That's on the Athletic. That's on the Athletic.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not as I say, I'm not as obsessed with him as I used to be, but I mean, I was, and it was. And I do think that he's one of them where he needs to not have a spotlight on him, really. I think that your Fulhams and your Crystal Palace is a sort of ideal, because it was once he was in a big once he was in a big spotlight and he had to talk all the time, he just gave himself away constantly, and I still know his game now because of how we like got to see the pattern of what he was doing, of kind of like managing expectations at every step and like getting ready even before anything had happened before the game. He was sort of preparing which players to elbow under the bus just in case, and you know, stitching up the young kids. And I don't know, it's just I really like the idea that his career's got this far just by very delicately managing expectations all along the way, and so it amuses me to see him in third because he'd be flapping.
I mean, we do know what he's about, don't we, Paddy? And I don't know whether that helps or not going into this weekend. I mean, we're just fans, we can talk about it, and I think, you know, the type of football he plays, how the decisions he'll make around teams. I mean, I seen a stat somewhere this week and I haven't written it down, I'm kicking myself now, but it was along the lines of, you know, they've only conceded 5 goals in the league at home, but they've only scored 4. Yeah. And I was like, that's the most Hodgson stat I've ever heard in my life, if there was one. But, you know, I mean, if Palace are happy with him, Palace are happy with him. And if Fulham fans still want to talk about him in a nice way, they can do. He can simultaneously be a good manager for them and a bad one for us.
Yeah, I think the maddest thing about him is how he's like still a thing, you know. Like, I thought, like, when England went out the Euros, I was convinced, like, right, we've won the argument, now he's gone forever. Exactly. Yeah. And he's somehow managed to find this niche club where they all really like him, don't they? They're all really into him, and they won't have a bad word said against him, even like in the times when they're not doing so great. And I just think,
you know, makes you think less of them, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And you look at their squad sometimes and their players, and you just think, there's definitely someone out there to be getting loads more out of them. And on this weekend's game, and how we know them, I don't want to tempt fate or whatever, but you just know any young, ambitious manager be looking at this going, right, we get top of the league at home, let's have a really good go at them. We've started the league really, really well. We've got really good players. But he'll be thinking, right, how can I somehow like grind my way out of this, or like damage limitation, or either get away with the draw, not have any go at all, or just, you know, make it a 2-0.
Lose 1-0, yeah, or whatever.
And then I'll sell it to the fans as, oh,
look, 1-1 would be utopia.
Yeah, look how good these are, like, coming to our ground. Like, we're never going to get anything against them. And somehow they all just go, yeah, yeah, all right, well, Roy said it, so we'll accept it. Well, I think it's mad.
I think we need to start, we'll start on this show right now, let's start changing the narrative, to use that phrase, but let's start changing it right now, Damien, about the idea that Palace are a bogey team.
No,
there is not. This residual feeling that I've got from Reds I've been around this week even. The reality is, listen carefully, everyone. We've won 6 of our last 7 against them, including the last 4 in a row. Our last defeat at Selhurst Park was under Brendan Rodgers in 14-15. We, meanwhile, the champions of Europe, are unbeaten in 29 Premier League games. We've won 24. We've drawn 5. It's 1 defeat in 51 Premier League games. Got to be confident, haven't we, mate?
Yeah, I think we should be as confident as you're making the case for. I know they've won a couple of games at Anfield, which will stick in their minds. And I think the whole bogey thing obviously goes back to that. Chris Stamball. Nice. I mean,
it's a draw.
Well, yeah, well, fair enough, you know, whatever. But
and they, I think, gave us a game at Anfield last season as well.
Indeed, he did, yeah. It was a cracker, yeah. And for the older guys like myself, you know, it goes back to the fact that we can beat them 9-0. And then lose an FA Cup semi-final against them, you know. So, you know, you don't remember all the wins in between those. You just have those memorable moments, because they are amongst the greatest moments for their team while we're getting on with other projects, you know what I mean? So I think that's the residual feeling for it. But the reality is that we've got a very good record down there, and we should not get sucked into anything else other than, and Liverpool are really good at this. There's a game in front of us. Doesn't matter about the one that's just gone. Doesn't matter about where we are in the league. There's a job to be done here. This is a resilient bunch, and you know, it's all coming together. I think a really good illustration of this game would be to look back at the Aston Villa game, and you've got a traditional ground, you've got a team down at the bottom of the league playing big club, the maze up, that, you know, this is the reason that they're in the Premier League for, 3 o'clock kickoff, let's have a go, work as hard as we can, you know, and Liverpool can look at that, and things went against Liverpool on that, you know, against Villa, and you know, the decision that could have been a goal, decision that could have been a penalty,
and they kept,
so just keep going, don't get carried away. We don't need to win 9-0, we don't need to do anything other than just what we've been doing. And you know, you can talk about, for example, Zaha, who gave Milner a ton of time at Anfield, but would you swap Zaha for Sadio Mane? Let's go down there and play to our strengths. And I had a quick scan about, you know, the expected lineup on that, and I noticed the Evening Standard in London, which is not a particular favourite publication of mine, it just came up on the feed I was looking at, and it just said expect a tight game and Liverpool to win with a late goal. And so there's the London press.
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard like Andros Townsend playing it down, saying we're expected to defend a lot in a game like this. So I just think the whole, that's the true narrative.
Mm.
Never mind a bogey team thing. And let's just get on with what we're doing. Just keep doing what we're doing.
The last five, Adam, for Palace, 1-1, drawn 1, lost 3. They lost to Chelsea in the last game. They lost to Leicester before that. They drew with Arsenal. They lost to Man City. And their last win was at West Ham United. The other thing I think worth mentioning as well, and I'm cribbing this a little bit from James Pearce's piece in The Athletic again, so sorry, mate, you've done the research and I'm robbing it, but, you know, such is life, mate. But Liverpool, 10 points from losing positions this season already. The last seven occasions when Liverpool have conceded the opener, they've won 6 and drawn 1. Again, just loads and loads of stuff that says the culture's right about Liverpool, the mindset's right. And while we might talk about Hodgson and bogey sides and remember games absolutely years ago when all the people involved were absolutely different, you get the sense, don't you, that inside Liverpool, at Melwood, at Anfield, when they're having the team meetings, None of this creeps in. They seem to be able to push all this stuff away these days.
Yeah, I think they do know how to win at this ground, and I think that it may be. I'd like it if we didn't concede first. I'd like it if we didn't concede, to be honest, because yeah, we've been conceding exactly one goal in every game, pretty much, haven't we, this season? And that's worse than last season's none or one. So I'd like to see us getting back to a bit more of that sort of solidity, and I expect us to with Alisson back in full time. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was another 2-1. Wouldn't be surprised at all. I think that generally it's been tight there. I know we won 2-0 last year, but it was a last minute 2, wasn't it? And I think we'd been a bit under a bit of pressure before we scored the second, and then I think it was last minute winner by Salah the season before. So to make it 2-1, and so it is. Away games are difficult, aren't they? It doesn't matter, you know, how good you are. There's a Premier League opponent there that wants to have a go. But yeah, I mean, and the Hodgson factor, as I said before, when he was our manager, whenever we went 1-0 up, I'd think, oh, it's probably going to finish 1-1 now. He'll find a way. But I would love us to. We're going to be able to tell sort of from the first 10 minutes, as you usually can with our games, and I'd like us to throw a few more Burnley away performances in, and a few less of the Villa away ones. Much as we end that game well, but yeah, I can just see it. I can see another 2-1.
Paddy, I wanted to do a little bit on the defence actually, and you know there is still a good chance that Robertson, for instance, doesn't play at the weekend. There's been varying reports this afternoon. Obviously, we're recording this on a Thursday. But basically, it started off that he'd played in the training session this afternoon. Now that's slightly changed to say that he's taken part in training. So has Salah, but it was in the pre-contact section of training. So in other words, they're not actually having a game of footy where anyone's getting stuck into them. So we shall see on that, but I think on the Robertson thing, you know, we obviously had the situation with the keeper. You've seen the centre-halves change as well. And there's been a little bit of disruption around the defence. And I like to think that's some of the reason for why we've maybe conceded one or two more. But nevertheless, I think Andrew Beasley wrote a piece in the week for The Echo, and he was talking about how Liverpool have only allowed more than 3 efforts on target in 2 of their league matches so far. So sort of quality of chances and number of goals and stuff hasn't been alarming by any stretch. There was also another piece, well, it wasn't a piece actually, it was a tweet by a lad who'd done a bit of research, which I enjoyed, and he was saying that Liverpool have caught teams offside more than anyone else. So while there's people digging the defence out a little bit, there's plenty to say we're all right. Do you know what I mean? And we can go to a place like Selhurst Park and keep a clean sheet.
Yeah, I think with a side as good as ours, people are always going to look for something.
Yeah.
And at the minute, the thing at the minute is the defence. There was times last season, I think it's probably this time last year when we were winning every week, but people were quite saying the front three weren't quite clicking, and was there something up with Salah because he was playing up front? And I think, and my argument was, well, we're winning every week, so I don't care if it's not like last season, like we're winning games of football. But so I think that's all it is at the minute. People looking for things, and people seem to have this, I don't want to call it an agenda, but this thing, because of what's happened in the past with Lovren, and some people are never going to get over it regardless of whatever information you can give them or what you've seen from them. So I think that's why it's a thing at the minute. But on them statistics, I think that sort of backs up the point that the goals that we're conceding at the minute, the likes of Villa away and things, and even the one against City, they're just soft goals where maybe it's a little lack of concentration. That's bound to happen when you've got players who aren't necessarily 10, 15 games into playing next to each other every week. When it was that set up back four of Trent, Van Dijk, Matip and Robertson, which you'd probably say was our strongest back four, but everyone's fully fit, we were solid as anything. And it's just that thing of now when players are coming out from not being in the side and not playing with each other every single week, you're bound to switch off. And also, these games are so important and so tight and things that if you'd have kept a clean sheet against City, that would have been mad. Like, the games like that are just, and the opposition's so good that you're just going to concede a goal.
Yeah.
And that Villa one's a bit unlucky because that could have been flagged for offside, and you know, things like that. And it's nothing to worry about really at all.
And you get the sense, don't you, as well, Damien, that Alisson, for instance, is just going to get better and better. He's still sort of feeling his way back in. He's done bits and bobs where you've thought, yeah, this is the Alisson I know.
Mm.
But equally, he's not being like totally, totally imposing like he was previously. So what I'm saying is there's still levels, still places for the defence to go. On Robertson, if he isn't fit to play, I think the go-to is normally Milner, isn't it? But it's been mentioned around the table already about, you know, he said himself his most difficult opponent was Zaha. Yeah. Now, if he's on the left, obviously Zaha normally plays the other side, but he's able to play the other wing.
He is.
And you'd think even Roy would spot, if Milner starts, maybe we put Zaha then on that side and then off you go again.
It's worth a go, isn't it?
But we were talking about this earlier in the day, and it's not just about one-on-one, is it? You know what I mean? So everyone will go, ooh, Zaha against Milner and he got him sent off last time and blah, blah, blah. But Zaha, one, has been carrying a bit of an injury and may not play, so we'll have to wait and see on that. Also, his return hasn't been great. You wonder about his head, I think.
His heart got broke with the transfer request,
exactly,
didn't he?
Yeah.
It's one of them. He's a very good player. And on his day, and he might look at this and say, Liverpool are in town, here we go. You know, if he has been downhearted, there's only one way back, isn't he? And that's to play himself back into the form, and what better advert than to give Liverpool a tough time in a game. It's a very difficult one, this, because right back you'd sort of say, well, okay, Milner's all right for, you know, certain games, but there is a genuine threat of if someone is on form like Zaha, that he could really, you know, be someone who could exploit you. But Milner's good going the other way, and Zaha isn't.
Yeah.
You know, and if they want to get their best player in his best position and start moving him round, and they haven't got too much else to worry us with, then that's tinkering him with their team. And this is where the mindset comes in. If you analyse it, you can get really, really worried about something. Whereas, if we dominate the ball, and if we know that Milner's good, you know, and he's learnt his lessons, and, you know, he's no slouch, Milner, is he? If he's had a bad time against someone, he'll have done his own work, he'll have been round the block. They'll have conversations and saying, don't let me get one-on-one in here, block that off there, no passing lanes here. All these conversations. And so, you know, for example, you know, Trent playing at Man City away in the European Cup match, you know, everyone was terrified about how he'd get on against Sane, wasn't it? And he really came. And because in the previous game there was an issue, that, you know, so, you know, once you've been bitten, you can sort of get onto it. And so I think the psychology around it is, I wouldn't start worrying about who can Gomez go over to left back and can we swap them round and whatever. If Milner's fit, yeah, I'd just say let's have it.
And you've got Mane ahead of you on that side.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So there it is. If you look at that, down that side, if Roy wants to take that gamble, go ahead then, let's have it.
What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think them conversations as well are just supporter based and over analysed. And I think the players, like we've discussed earlier on the show, about the mentality and the togetherness of the group, I think they all think they're great and they're right to think that. And I don't think one for one second, if it has been discussed in training this week, that Milner's going to lower left back, the players will be speaking among themselves, going, oh God, what if he puts Zaha on the right? Like, what's James going to do? Like, I think they'll just think they'll go into the game and they'll think, well, all right, like football's not played like top trumps where because the halves we're faster than Milner, like they're going to go 1-0. Do you know what I mean? So I think Van Dijk will just think, oh well, I'll keep an eye on that side and I'll keep an eye on to cover him a bit more, and when Alden, who plays left centre mid, will be like, alright, I might have to drop a bit when they break on us. But I just don't think the players at all, especially this side, think of these things as problems anymore. They just think, well, they'll look for the positives and what Milner can offer and be like, well, what's he going to do going forward, and rather than worry about it at all.
Yeah, it's like the age-old Liverpool thing, isn't it, Adam, of make them worry about us type of thing, because there's plenty for them to worry about.
And I think we're at the stage where it's almost just like whoever's in the shirts, you know, there's enough there to frighten any opposition, and they're not going to be, you know, that they're the other team's fans aren't going to be thinking, oh, you know, brilliant, it's Milner. You know, that there's not. I don't think that the other team will think of it as a weakness. They'll be looking at everybody else. You know, yeah. Left back isn't the first thing you tend to look at for dangers. There is part of me, I think I touched on this before, there's part of me that thinks kind of big picture when we've talked about international breaks in the past, we sort of said, I wish they'd all pull out. And it's a conversation me and Neil have had in the past of like, I wonder whether Klopp and the international managers has got a thing where he says, one of these breaks, I might ask you, because we've got things happening or it's going well, I might be pulling a few out. And I think there's part of me that thinks that we've just done that. I'll be intrigued to see who starts, because I do kind of think they might.
Lot of people came home all of a sudden, didn't they?
Yeah, so Salah doesn't go and Robertson doesn't go. And,
Virgil comes back.
Gomez
comes
back.
Personal reasons.
Virgil comes back, yeah.
Jordan supposedly has a virus, but he's back and he's supposedly fine. Gomez is fine.
I just think that he might have identified this one as the one because of what's coming. And even if, I'll think I'm right even if they don't start, because we've got that much coming up that... I know that that Klopp likes to have these sort of whole preparation weeks, and I think that this has been a big one. And I think that I don't know. I feel like it's been a good break anyway. This international break, I haven't watched any footy, and it's felt relaxing. And it feels like we are really, really gearing up for something. And this has made me excited to talk about it, to be honest, because I sort of forgot about it.
And if what you're alluding to has happened and they've had a word and said, listen, let's manage these players, we've got a hell of a schedule coming up, you can spin it the other way around, say, well, yeah, England's going to be in the Euros at the end of the year. Look at all what we've got on. Well, I'm going to be using these lads all the while. If you want me to burn them out and you have got the leftovers in the summer, that's up to you. So let's work together here. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it, all round?
There's a psychological thing at play with and it is on the agenda coming up with City, because we play first this weekend, and I think almost as much as anything, really, that's such a key thing now for these next few weeks. It's almost like who doesn't win first, and it doesn't really matter who we're playing, because I think if we keep winning and they slip. If they drop before we do now, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
So us playing first makes this a big game. There are all big games in the league, but it's a huge one to win, I think.
Well, we know as well, don't we, Paddy, from what we've seen from Guardiola, that he quite clearly keeps an eye on what Liverpool are doing. There's no two ways about that. So if Liverpool can come off the pitch at Selhurst Park clutching 3 points, he will know about that when they take to the pitch against Chelsea. So will the crowd.
Yeah.
And, you can talk about it however you want, but everyone will know, basically. And you would think that makes a difference, that they're going out there 12 points behind Liverpool at this stage.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's not as if they're going to answer this big cauldron anyway, but they're all in the boozers, keeping an eye on the 3 o'clock kickoff scores and then going to the R5. And
it's worse that they're at home, probably. Atmosphere-wise, the away crowd's up, whatever, isn't it?
Yeah. And even, I wouldn't say much about their atmosphere, but a positive atmosphere just in general does help players. So, like Adam says about playing away from home, Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva are playing away from home, they don't need to worry about that little small corner of away fans and what they've seen in the boozer and being 12 points behind. But going to a full stadium, knowing the pressure's on, we're all coming out of the ground watching that game and hoping that they slip up, I think it's massive pressure on them. So if we got 3 points this weekend, I think they might struggle. I really do think they'll struggle.
Absolutely. And just one last thing before we go. Sadio Mane loves playing Crystal Palace. 7 goals in 9 against them. More than any other side. You get those little weird things in life, don't you? So don't back against Sadio doing it again at Selhurst Park. Thanks, everyone, for being on the show. Thanks for listening. And if you fancy voting for the Anfield Wrap as well, we are up for an award with the Football Supporters Association. We are up for Fan Media of the Year. We'd love your vote. If you go to theanfieldwrap.com/vote for tour, TAW, you can vote for us there. Please do. The votes close the end of this month, I think it is. So get stuck in, vote for us. We'd love to lift an award. It's been a while and we've all got massive egos to feed. That has been the Weekender from the Anfield Wrap. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.